Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my. Nirja?
Yes.
Okay, I'm having trouble getting into. Okay, I'm in.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. The show just went live and I wasn't here. Welcome to another reality show, my friends. I am your host, Golden Hawk, and I am extremely excited to be here. As just moments ago, the show started and I was not here. We just love when Goldie pops in and out. This is what she does. Anyways, we have an exquisite show planned for tonight. And before I get into the guests and into the topic, there's just a few announcements that I want to make. First of all, next week is Third Thursdays, which means my beloved friend and guest, the goddess Sophia, channeled through Christina Keene, she'll be on, and she'll be taking questions and answering all of the divine things that we have maybe not found within ourselves yet. Christina will help guide us to within to find those answers. Also, a lot of people have been following me on my my Twitter page, as well as Facebook. We are indeed looking to plan a pod, the Almeen pod, the New York pod. I have not closed on a venue. We are very close to doing that. As soon as I close, though, I will let everybody know where that will be so we can start promoting the wonderful and beautiful Almeen. All very exciting stuff. But we have a wonderful, exciting show for us this evening. Tonight is going to be a night where we're going to dive within our experiences with an exquisite woman who has written actually several books on the idea of going within, finding ourselves within, and experiencing the bliss within. Tonight, Nirja Bhatia, am I pronouncing that correctly?
You are.
Excellent. Okay. Nirja Bhatia has more than 15 years' experience in management, business development, marketing, and organizational facilitations and training. Okay, she ain't no joke. She's been in that corporate world. Her training and background includes delivering programs on topics like emotional intelligence, leadership, situational coaching, change management, and communications. Nirja is known for creating a life-altering experience by helping individuals see through the not-so-obvious, the root causes of people's problems. Her keen sense of awareness provides clarity and focus for her clients. Her expertise is in providing simplified and experiential approach to problems dissolving. Focus on the solution and the problem will dissolve. Now, this is a fabulous quote that I'm very excited to share. What makes Nirja unique is her ongoing research and unbreakable belief in human greatness. I can't even tell you how, when I read that line, Nirja, and still right now, the depth at which I resonate with that sentence and that principle. Yeah, it's very deep.
Yeah, well, Goldie, the way you were reading it, it was touching my soul, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is amazing. Did I forget I wrote it?
Well, when I first read that, when I was putting up the description of you and on the guest and for the page for the show tonight, I am such an optimist. I'm a firm believer that humankind, if they knew what I know you know and what I know, and I'm not saying we know it all, but we know a part of it, mm-hmm. The love that could be experienced right here and right now, the beauty that could be experienced right here and right now is so available to everyone, whether you're having mortgage crisis and payments not being able to be made, or whether you're Donald Trump sitting on, you know, many bank accounts that are flourishing. And I don't know that he's flourishing. I'm just using him as an example. But meaning the true joy and experience of depth in life, that it has nothing to do with our bank accounts or the cars that we drive or the clothes that we wear or the people that we associate with, but has everything to do with the treasure within.
I couldn't agree more, Goldie, and you've said it so profoundly.
Oh, well, you know, I have been reading your book, your exquisite book. You've written two. Tonight, what I wanted to do is because, you know, I'm like the Venus flytrap. I want to get you back on the show again. So we're not going to talk about the second book, The Art of Resilience, till next time.
All right.
But the exquisite reading and beautiful way that you write the book. Oh, God, I can't believe I don't have the title right now. The Bliss book. What is the Knowing the Self?
Bliss is in knowing the self.
It is such an extraordinary, it's simple. It's written what I call in a language that I could read this to the children that I work with.
Oh, wow.
And I believe because of they haven't been deprogrammed out, they would understand what you're writing. And there is a beauty in being simple. Because the program, I believe, that gets us all wound up and chaotic and into panic attacks is very complicated. It works on the belief that we think complicated means it's important.
Well, can I share a little secret with you?
Oh, please. You, me, and, you know, the millions of people that are listening.
Yeah, of course. And I think this is such a good time to share this. And
please.
I am coming out and open with it.
Okay.
Without really finding my own inner self, I would have never found a writer in me.
Ah.
So what you are reading, my friend, I before a few years ago, I didn't even know I could do it.
See, that's an exquisite. See, were you in your passion when you were writing this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so clear. I ask that question with really all knowing this because I can feel you have imbued the words of your book. When I read it, I feel your passion, which clearly triggers my passion.
Yes, and that is my sole purpose, and that is what I use. When we experience this fully, we're able to relay it with conviction.
Yes.
Because it's not coming from the mind. It's not coming from one aspect of ourselves. It's coming from an alignment of who we truly are.
Well, then that's exactly right. See, we have such a tremendous support in our experience, in our lives, when that alignment is reached. I mean, when we see ourselves as just our bodies, meaning, you know, if you walk up to the average person on the streets and say, you know, hi, my name is Golden Hawk, and who might you be? They would give their name, their occupation. If you were in front of them, they would state, you know, it would be clear whether their gender was male or female, even though there's parts of San Francisco that would be questionable, which I love. You know, many of the identifications we have when we're just starting this journey of awakening is everything to do with the physical being.
You touch upon a beautiful point, and this is where we are only expressing our labeled self. That's what I call the labeled self.
Okay.
I'm Neerja Bhatia. I was born here. I'm a woman. I can only do so much because that I'm coming from my memory, my conditioned self, my ego self.
Yes.
But when I start the journey and I begin to taste that ever-present moment, that expansiveness in the here and now, then those labels start to tear away.
Yes.
You break from that box and you recognize, wow, there is this exquisite beauty that can come into the moment with a flow. And unless we taste it, unless we live in it, unless we experience it, it is like a mundane life.
It really is very flat.
It is.
It's almost, it's like people, I know I've heard people call, engineers talk about things like on documents, certain documents, that the two-dimensional is the flatliner world.
Mm-hmm.
Engineers and scientists, I believe, call it the world of flatliners. The minute we get depth, which is the third dimension,
mm-hmm.
everything comes alive. It jumps off the page, right? We get depth.
Yeah.
When we explore the depth of our beingness,
mm-hmm.
we become alive. And then when we take it an even one dimension further, which is the dimension of time, and understand ourselves as timeless.
Oh, God. I was just telling my husband, he's been after me. He's saying, when are you going to write your third book? And all of a sudden, I got this energy yesterday, and I started writing, and I go up to him. I said, what are you going to give me if I finish my third book in a week's time?
Wow. Oh, I got chills.
Me.
I got chills. Go, girl.
And he looks at me, and he goes, well, you know what? Don't you're daring yourself because I know you can do it.
I truly believe that in the timeless space, if
yeah.
that is where your third book comes from, which would not that's so I have no doubt that that is you are completely capable of expanding yourself to that space to bring in the third book.
And that's what it is. It's not whether I'm capable, but it's that timeless time is so capable of bringing anything.
Absolutely.
That's where the magic happens.
And it's where it happens. Really, when people say that can't be done, there's not enough time, that is such a belief system that, in my opinion, what I'm very excited about speaking with you tonight is people don't realize that there is a matrix. And what I call the matrix is the machine. And the machine is something we were born into. All of us have relatively been conditioned to this machine based on the fact that our parents were a part of the machine as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no shame and there's nothing to blame from our parents. It was part of the cycle of why we came to experience human bodies. Human souls having human bodies, souls having human body experiences. But the beautiful part is we have enough conscious momentum right now that if we want to expunge ourselves from this machine, the support energetically, the support physically from peers and books and radio shows and groups that are gathering is more now than ever before in human history.
You know, you call it the machine, and I call it the mechanical self. You can give it different names.
Exactly.
And what I would like to add here is that I have been on this personal journey for a very, very long time now. It seems like ages. And what I am feeling today, it's in the corporate world, you can call it the groupthink.
Okay.
You know,
okay. Exactly.
A bunch of people start to think similar wavelengths, the change is possible.
Yes.
So this is happening because I feel that all the work that I've done today, there's exponential growth going on.
There is.
Like you can get into that realm of alignment with a lot more ease today than I could have 5 years ago.
I agree, totally. Totally. And I also have been on this journey for, consciously,
mm-hmm.
14, 15 years.
Mm.
But, you know, because the funny part for me, I can't imagine not being on there are friends of mine who I'm like, you know, did you read that? Did you go to that? Did you try that practice? And you know, they're like, well, you know, I really don't have time. I got the kids, and we've got some stuff going on, and I'm planning the summer vacation. And I honor that. You know, I don't have children. I have cats and plants.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, whom I live with graciously, is pretty self-reliant, so he does his own thing. And so, because often it'll be that, oh, you have the time, Goldie, because you don't have, you know, personal responsibilities. And I try to convey to them that the personal responsibility to my own soul
mm-hmm.
would never be, if I have children, and it is still my goal in this lifetime to have children, my child would support me following my soul's purpose because that journey would support, by example, the relationship I have with that child.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I know myself to be my soul, the greatest gift gift I can give my child is that they're a soul. I don't. In fact, we are definitely going to read that poem in the book. Khalil Gibran.
Khalil Gibran. Go ahead. I love that poem.
Okay, because I have marked pages that I want to read. Okay, let's read it right now, though. Let me get to the page. We might jump around a little, but you have exquisite examples and in the book, which, by the way, I want everybody to know, if you go on the episode page, if you hold your mouse over, there's a little X for The Art of Resilience, and then there's a picture of the cover of Bliss, Knowing Thyself. If you hold your mouse over it, it will take you directly to a link on Amazon where you can purchase the book, which, I mean, we just love, personally, I know I do, we just love convenience. Convenience on a talk show. But okay, here is the Khalil Gibran.
There we go.
It's easier to say when I'm looking at his name. Here is his poem, and this is an exquisite poem. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backwards, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer seeks the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hands be for gladness. Oh, God, that rocks.
You read so beautifully, Goldie.
Well, because I got to tell you a quick story. This is a sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
My birth name, and I have not revealed this on Blog Talk Radio. I did when I was on my other station. My birth name was Cindy, which in and of itself is a beautiful name. But I reached a frequency. When your name is Cindy or Cynthia, oftentimes what people call you is Sin. Sin, which is originally an archer's term, means to miss your mark. And when I recognized if I continued in this expression, this physical incarnation, to acknowledge my presence by the word that says you'll miss your mark, It felt as I was not in harmony with that.
Right.
So I put it out to the universe and said, okay, I don't know what name you want to give me. Give me a name. Just make sure the nickname, because if everybody called me Cindy, my name actually wasn't Cynthia, it was Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have ever gone there. Mm-hmm. But most of the people called me Sin. In fact, to this day, my father still calls me Sin. But because, you know, because he's my dad and, you know, a little resistant to change. We just let him do that. As long as the rest of the world acknowledges me as Goldie or Golden, which clearly fits my... So when I read this about the children and the archer's hand and made it go swift and far, I was like, oh my God. I just went, okay, we're going to mark that. That will be something we speak about tonight. I mean...
Well, so true about this, because I have two children, and they're 21 and 20, and sure enough, there was a struggle when I tried to mold them into anything other than who they truly are.
Absolutely.
And same thing with me when I got that impression from the parents.
Yes.
Or the in-laws, when they are trying to mold you into something that they want us to be,
yes.
It's painful.
Very much so.
It really restricts you.
Well, and that's when we can learn, because I mean, and I'm telling you, your book, it so expresses these in chapters so brilliantly.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I mean, I'm telling you, I highly recommend Bliss is in Knowing the Self. I'm going to get this title right because now I'm looking at it. I mean, once you read it, don't worry about the title, but you need the title to get to the book so you can read it. It is, I mean, you have these exquisite charts. You have exquisite areas where if you own the book, there's places to write down your personal experiences and how to transcend the conditioned space of what Nirja calls the mechanics of life, what I call the machine, mm-hmm. and how to break out. In other words, love, compassion, wisdom, and power are the weavings of
they're the pillar of our strength. That is the bottom line. That is who we are.
It's exact the pillars of our strength. If here's what we have when we're in the ego and when we're not embracing and embodying our true self. And tell me how many people out there this resonates for. Fear, isolation, ignorance, and doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are prevalent experiences on the planet right now. And it's only because we might not have been exposed to, or we might not have been taught that there is a deeper way to live and to experience reality right now. And it has nothing to do with how much is in your bank account. It has nothing to do with whether you're single or coupled. It has nothing to do with the physical outside world. But ironically, when you learn to work the inside world effortlessly, usually you'll get everything that you've been desiring for. It'll just show up differently.
It does. For each one of us, it does. And at the same time, when we really want to start exploring our inner world, how do we begin?
Oh, let's talk about that.
That comes up a lot for me from my clients.
Yes.
Where do I begin? It's so much easier to focus on the outside and other people than it is to look at your own self.
Yes.
A good place to begin is the opposite of love, compassion, wisdom, and power.
Okay.
So fear and isolation, ignorance, doubt, they're constantly coming up at a level of feelings. And these feelings are a very good place to start, because feelings are the alarm system that goes off inside of us. It's a natural alarm system that goes off.
I love it.
And what we've learned to do is we've learned to hit the snooze button on it, shut it off.
Definitely.
And we shut it off by means of addictions.
Mm.
And this could be addictions to the television, work, food, sugar, caffeine. You name it.
Mm-hmm.
We become socialholics, workaholics, that's what I call them. And every time we're running away from this feeling of anxiety, fear, isolation, doubt, what we're doing is we're missing out on an opportunity to peel the layer of where bliss resides.
That's deep.
Yes, it is deep.
But we need to go deep, babe. We have been assigned this task this evening. So, no, keep going. You're speaking eloquently.
Okay, thank you.
You're
and,
so welcome.
So when the fear comes up, instead of running away from it or shutting it off, can I be courageous enough to sit with it?
Mm.
To sit with it and really look at it, because it's not going to kill us. I can guarantee you it's not going to kill you.
Indeed.
Pain will show up, a sensation will show up in your body, and one thing that I can guarantee you is it's not going to remain the same. It's going to fluctuate, it may increase in intensity, it'll decrease in intensity, but without us watching it and observing it and questioning it on how real is it, what we're going to do is through the questioning period or the questioning process, we can get to the bottom of where our belief is. So, for instance, if, let's say, a doubt comes into my mind, let's say it comes up as I'm going to give a talk in front of 100 people.
Okay.
And the doubt comes into my mind, uh-oh, you know what? What if I goof up?
Right.
And I feel that feeling as a sensation of a rock, a solid rock in my stomach.
Okay. Well said.
And as I see it, I, instead of saying, okay, you know what, let me ignore it, let me just have a strong, and then I can be fine. Well, by suppressing it, I'm doing injustice to myself.
Okay.
When it comes up, I look at it and I say, okay, when was the last time it showed up like this? How can I breathe into it? Breathing into it will start to change the sensation. It'll lighten up the sensation. If I continue to breathe into it, I ask myself, what is it saying to me? What is it showing me? Where am I stuck?
Right.
And as I get to the belief that, oh, you know what, I am not good enough to go present in front of 100 people. That was a belief that I probably grew up with or caught it somewhere along the line, but is it really true? No. I've done it over and over again.
Right.
But that the memories or that machine or that mechanical mind gets in the way.
Right.
And it brings that belief to your awareness through those body sensations, through those feelings. And that's why we cannot ignore feelings. And that's why emotional intelligence is so important in the corporate world, in your home life. Without having emotional sense of that awareness, that intelligence, we are drowning in our feelings,
right,
through addictions and zero self-awareness.
Yeah, life, and you know what it equals when we're drowning? Fear, isolation, ignorance, and doubt.
Yeah.
That becomes the experience when we're not when we're not experiencing the connection of the self. And it's like, it's so interesting because, I mean, right now, I don't know exact numbers, but right now, I would easily say 60% of adults are on some sort of antidepressant medication.
Oh, yes, of course, absolutely.
And I understand that, you know, the medication helps us not to feel the rock in our stomach.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look or speak to anyone that's been on the medication for a significant time, any time from 3 to 6 months or longer, if you ask them, hey, how's your life going? They're not feeling better because they're numb.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, one of the things that I believe is accompanying this awakening is, and that's why your book is so wonderful and beautiful, we have to redefine what the machine has told us is negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because the pain, if you looked at it as an indicator,
mm-hmm,
you know, when we're driving along in our car and the indicator light of the engine comes on, we go, oh, it's time to take it into the shop. Something's going wrong. And it's not enough to take the car to a full stop. So how happy we are, the indicator light goes on, so we can then repair whatever's been depleted or fix a fuse or fill some oil. Why is it that we look at pain in our bodies and turn away from that? Because the indicator is trying to help us before we go down.
Oh, you put it so beautifully, Goldie.
And
the reason is because our school system had no course on emotional intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
That is why it is so important to add emotional intelligence in kindergarten, in schools.
Absolutely.
Where children are learning it early, that you cannot avoid the pain. And pain is your friend. It is not your enemy.
At all.
It is the gateway. And as you peel those layers through the process that I explain in the book, through questioning, through sitting with it, through awareness,
yes,
what you do is you get to the place where you can feel connected. So, for instance, over time, if there is something that would bother you for years, through this process of self-awareness, it's going to start to bother you for days, then, you know,
weeks,
hours, and then minutes.
Oh,
and
it's going less than, right.
It's going less and less and less, and then you're going to be able to observe it, look at it, and you're going to say, oh, there is that feeling, and that does not define who I am.
It's so exquisite, because that is literally, as we are redefining these definitions, like we said, like you said, the school systems, everybody who knows, I mean, it's clear to me that homeschooling is becoming quite prevalent in the country, because everything in our school system focuses on the left brain only.
Yes.
Very what I call flat learning. It's, you want to talk about a tree, go to page 57. You want to talk about China, go to page 79. You want to talk about whatever, it's page this, it's page that. Remember, two-dimensional, where the children, you want to talk about a tree, well, take them outside. Let them touch the tree, let them hold the tree, smell the tree, and genuinely know the essence that the tree might be named, quote-unquote, an oak, but the essence of that being is in the diva, the spiritual, the metaphysical. I mean, from what I know from my shamanism and my metaphysical training, if you're working multidimensional, which many of the children are, they're just born with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever got stuck in between dimensions, if you've befriended a tree, it is the trees that will help you get unstuck.
Yeah, well, they bring back your senses. They bring your senses alive, because the two-dimensional thinking has killed our senses. They believe we only have five senses.
I know!
And it's not true. It's far from the truth.
It is far from the truth.
You have, I mean, thousands of senses, but now actually Dr. Michael Cohen is coming up with a study. Well, he has been teaching this for years now, and he has a PhD program where you can actually awaken 53 senses by connecting with nature. He calls it eco-psychology.
Oh, I love it.
We are so connected. Everything is connected. And if we deprive our children from being in the nature and make them sit in the classrooms to learn about nature, it's going to kill their senses.
Well, it's like an atrophy. Like any muscle that doesn't get used. I mean, look at any athlete that if they go into the hospital, they have to keep working their legs, even if they may, you know, somebody comes in and actually bends their leg forward and backwards. You must use the muscle. And the thing about our education right now, it has, for pretty much 100 years, I'll just go back 100 years, it's served to only know two-dimensional in our education, because technology was birthing itself within that 100 years.
Right.
But technology, where it is clearly has the potential to help us live a more comfortable life, it clearly has the technology to help us do the mundane things so people don't have to, has, because we've kind of become like worshiping to this technology, I see people in, like you were saying earlier, addicted to texting and cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
It's the technology is working against us instead of for us, because one of the things that needs to be coupled with the level of technology that we have, and that's a level of consciousness.
Thank you for saying that.
Because, and, you know, that's kind of where, you know, where me and you kind of come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so funny. My consciousness, I've just started using a cell phone 2 months ago. It's my first.
Oh,
I mean,
wow, you're amazing.
Oh, well, I mean, put it this way. You don't miss what you don't have. And I can tell you, I'm starting to attempt to dial while I'm driving, going, oh, this is just pure danger. You know, danger, Will Robinson, danger. It's like, this is so clearly, you know what? I don't need to call while I'm driving. I'm just going to continue in my silence or my listening to what I'm listening to. But I've never felt at lack because I didn't have a cell phone. I was genuinely happy because I do a lot of traveling. And it's great to be able to say, if something was to go wrong, I have access to a phone to call, whatever help I would need. But the joy and genuine depth of my being fulfilled never had a weight that because I didn't have a cell phone, I did not feel connected or appreciated or a part of this whole experience I call my life.
Well, Goldie, hats off to you for staying away from that technology for so long. I'm just like blown away.
Well, I think it comes down to as we start flipping these definitions in our life, the definition of, you know, I really believe, and I say this with all my heart, and my mom, just as a sidebar, my mom died from chemotherapy. She didn't die of cancer. Her heart collapsed from 5 years of chemo.
It's
fine. I understand that my mom was stubborn as a mule in that she believed Western medicine was the only way that could help her. And I've talked to her post since she's passed on to the other side, and she's like, why didn't I listen to you? And I'm like, I don't know, but you can listen now, even out of body. But one thing I get is, as we flip these definitions, I know people that will get serious illnesses because it is a way to heal them of their beliefs.
Well, I can share something with you.
Oh, please. Okay.
I am so sensitive to energy.
Okay.
That if I hold the cell phone to my ear for more than 3 to 4 minutes, my ear begins to hurt, and
really?
I really have to shut the phone down before it gets to be a very piercing ache.
Really?
So, yeah, my cell phones, I don't try to stay on them for more than 2 to 3 minutes. It's like a very important conversation, you know, just make it very brief, and that is about it. I still love my landline.
Indeed, indeed.
And, if I don't have to be on that cell phone, I try to stay away from it. But again, it's very important for me to keep, especially when I'm traveling for business.
Well, exactly.
It's
good to be connectable. It's just, it's understanding. And that's just one belief. I mean, the beliefs that we're talking about here go as deep as, you know, the belief that if we don't have cars and boats and motorcycles and jet skis. I mean, I live in Fairfield County. If it's not the richest county in America, it's the second richest county. We are essentially the East Coast Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
You live here as well, because Stanford is also part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's so interesting is in such an area so blatantly, I don't even know how to describe it. There's so much wealth around here. I mean, it's thick. It's thick with wealth. Now, being a nanny for the last 17 years, I've been in many people's homes, quote-unquote, behind scenes. You know, I'm playing with the kids when their lives are kind of, you know, going on. The parents' lives are going on as they go about their business while I'm sitting there on the floor playing with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
You would think with all the opportunity that, quote-unquote, money could adorn for them, they would be the happiest people on the planet.
That's impossible. It's impossible because money can only buy you a satisfaction for a time being.
Talk to me, girlfriend. Speak your truth. Hallelujah.
You can win a lottery. And what will happen is it'll make you very happy and excited for a short time.
Okay.
And what that short time is going to be depends on your mental, like your mind set point.
Yeah.
And the mind set point is very interesting. The figures are like this. 43% of your happiness depends on how your mind is set. It's like your DNA on how much chemicals your body is producing,
okay.
How much endorphins your body is producing to make the glass look half empty or half full. And 8%, okay, you're with me? 8% is the outer circumstances, whether you have the money or the fanciest car or the latest technology. It's only 8%, whether you're in a loving relationship or not. And then 49% is what we're talking about, conscious awareness choices.
Almost 50% of happiness is derived not by what's happening on the outer world, but the connection and the, I mean, I'm not a big one to throw the word God around. I love the word divinity.
And that is the conscious awareness, because in that alignment, we are the divine.
We really are. It's like, you know, one of the things that's going to flip as anyone starts taking the journey within, God was taught to us as being, at least in America, so I'm going to talk basically from a Jewish point of view, a Catholic point of view, and a Muslim point of view. Masculine, outside of us, look up to the clouds kind of experience. Hmm. It can't be, like when I tell my people I know, whether they're my friends or just people who happen to be listening to me chatting with a friend, you know, in a grocery store line, when I say that I am God also, and they, you know, you clearly get that they look at you like, you know, can you manifest something, right? You know, can you make, I don't know. It's always something physical. You know, people think of God as a power. It is not, my definition of God is not to be power, the power over nature.
To contain the happiness within.
That's it. I mean, I just want to go through this experience in this particular incarnation as someone that feels a peace because I'm whole and complete. That is one of my definitions of God, being whole and complete. I want to experience this as joyful because in my joy, I can share that joy with whether it be a tree, a squirrel, a friend, or a plant, whatever.
Well, when you're looking through the eyes of alignment of your mind, heart, soul, how can you find deficiency in anything or anyone?
You don't.
You don't.
You really don't.
Absolutely not. And that's what, with this percentage, it was just amazing. It was a big aha moment for me when I looked at this percentage.
Yeah.
Most of the self-help books, everything out there, focuses on the 49%.
Yes.
And what happens is we ignore the 43%.
Right.
The 43% is what is driving our beliefs. It is the mechanical point. It is the machine. It is the mechanical mind. It's the conditioned mind.
Right.
And that conditioned mind overrides our conscious awareness choices. It overrides that alignment that you and I can experience in the moment.
Right.
And people struggle because they don't know how to work with that mindset, how to change that mindset.
Right. They believe that it's beyond them to change.
Right. And the only way to change it is through self-knowledge, knowing the self, self-awareness. If you don't take the time to spend with yourself to find out who you are, to find out what is it that makes my boat float. What is it that I'm here to do? If I don't take the time out for that, I am going to be stuck in that rut. I'm going to be stuck in that mechanical pattern, and I would not have the privilege to be in that conscious awareness choice.
That's, you're hot, babe.
You are too.
See, just so the audience knows, me and Nirja, we met hiking through one of my favorite places on the planet, which is the Chambers. And as soon, I think we must have been 10 feet into the hike, me and Nirja just found ourselves walking on the path side by side. I mean, I had no idea that she had written books or, you know, what her path had led her to this, to the particular time that we were hiking. But there's a radiance, my friends, and a presence when people who have done the inner work radiate outwards. It is such a tremendous experience to be one of those people, meeting one of those people, because it's truly, it's life-changing. It's what the earth cries for. It's what the galactics are waiting for us to become. It's like everything is pivoting. All of the cosmos is pivoting on us getting this recognition on planet Earth. There's a whole long definition for that, and we can go into that another time. But it's like you just can't believe how unbelievably exhilarating, and you never feel like you can make a mistake when you're in the presence of someone who's done the inner work, because there's no judgment about any illusion other than, would you like some help seeing through it?
Oh, thank you for saying that. I'm speechless.
I felt that as soon as within 10 feet of us walking. And then, of course, a mutual friend, Bernie, goes, hey, she's written books. And I'm like, oh, I want you on the show. I was just like an orgasm going, please come on. And you were like, sure, you know, of course, let's talk about it, all good. It was like, oh, but that was such a no-brainer to me because I resonate with people that you know, it's like they call it the work, but I'm going to flip that because when we learn to play within, you'll see the real work is keeping the energy to keep the illusions up. Unbelievable amounts of energy go to making these illusions stay in our presence, and then what we get from them is fear, isolation, ignorance, and doubt. It's like we work really hard to kick our own ass. I mean, that is just our truth.
That, you know, you've brought up such a good point, Goldie, and before I actually explain this thing further,
okay.
I just want to say, ditto, I felt the same way about you, Goldie.
Aww. You're
an amazing being, and you were radiating, and I felt so comfortable with you. And yes, you're right. There is no judgment because we know that any judgment we put out there, it's looking back at the judgment within.
Exactly. Exactly.
And to the point that you were just making, you know, we work so hard on keeping the illusion. It's insane. In the corporate world, we call it the soft skills, like the soft stuff.
Really? Interesting that they call it the soft. Yes.
The soft stuff. Oh, you know what? This is soft stuff. Well, it isn't. It's the hard stuff.
Yes.
You need courage to look inside. You need courage to let go of that extra energy we're putting into keeping the illusion up. You need to really look inside and look. We're not afraid to go through the pain. I don't think any human being is afraid to go through the pain.
I agree.
You know what we're really afraid of? We are afraid that we are going to come face to face with that inner exquisite beauty, that inner expansive self. We're afraid to face that because we don't believe we are that.
Right. Right. Well, there's a fear that it will reject us.
Yeah.
I think we have a fear of rejection, that this inner beauty. And it's so funny because it can't reject us. It's us. You know, once we get through, because, you know, it's so funny, courage, a template of what this all means, you know, something written down of, because I'm referencing in my own head The Wizard of Oz. It takes heart, it takes the mind to know of the expansion, the courage to walk the path, and where it brings us is to a home that is not the home that you have to go someplace to get to, per se. It's the home of source within, the home of divinity. Mm-hmm. Right here, right now, being experienced as heaven on earth right now.
Yeah.
Whoo!
Yeah.
I am loving this. Okay, I want to read something, actually, something you wrote. Let me see if I can find it. You have in your book 7 principles to inner balance.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to read them or read them one by one and discuss them.
Okay, sure.
Because I think it's, like I said, the beauty is that you've put things down very, very simply. And that's not insane. You know, it's so funny. When look at some of the greatest heroes, whether they be celluloid or in real life. Forrest Gump, in his simplicity, everything came his way.
Yeah.
Everything. So, you know, as I can remember as a child, I felt like I was a child compared to where I am now, graduating high school, I got my first job. I was working at a bank, mm-hmm. and I felt so, oh my God, prestigious, because it was also a bank that was right around the corner from where I lived. Mm-hmm. So as time went on, I knew my best friend's father's paycheck amount. I knew my neighbor's mortgage payments. I knew if they were late or not. I mean, there was an unbelievable amount of information that I felt, wow, I am peeking behind the curtain here because I am working in my own neighborhood. But what's so interesting is everything about what I worked for the bank for 3 years and then had to leave because they wanted to complicate things. The higher I went up in the banking industry, which would have been next, would have been customer service and then doing mortgages, I really saw early that it was like, this is a system that has failure written all over it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I swear to goodness, I knew that intuitively and said, I'm not going to put an invested amount of time into this. And it was like the draw and the thing that was tantalizing to me was, oh, but you'll know. And I was like, but it didn't feel right to me because I quit banking to clean houses. And I cleaned houses because it was simple. I mean, it was like I just knew intuitively. I know all this, of course, coming back from now to from then to now, but simplicity is something. If someone had called me a simple being before, I would have been insulted by that. I am no longer not only not insulted, I hope that I am so transparent and so simple that everyone looks at me and goes, you know, they see me and go, look, she's just like a child.
Well, Goldie, it takes a lot of courage to reverse back to being a child.
Mm.
A lot of courage. I admire you, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I tell people this because the best reward is my own life is my reward.
You know, I have another friend like this, Kate, who's also so simple.
Okay.
And something she taught me, and I'm never going to ever forget this lesson because today I play with that lesson and I play with it to the point where I want to live it in every moment of my life. And she would say to me, why are you restricting yourself as a speaker or a trainer?
Okay.
And I would say, what do you mean I'm restricting myself? I am a trainer. I am an international speaker. I go around. And she says, wait. What if you don't have assignments for the next few months or the year? Are you willing to just be a housewife during that time? Are you willing to do just be cleaning your own home?
Wow.
Are you willing to just be a mother for that day? And that opened my eyes because I'm so glad I learned it soon enough that when through the economy downturn,
right,
when I did not have my assignments,
right,
I was willing to do other things and I was willing to be more than just a trainer. I was willing to be a human being. I was willing to be a writer.
Right.
I was willing to be a wife, a mother. But before that, my career was the most important thing to me.
Right.
And it does. It plays with your ego. It plays with your mind. It plays with your mechanical way of thinking.
Mm, very much so. And if you think about it, coming out of the school system, everything in the school system promotes that mechanical way of thinking.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, I don't even have to go. We clearly get it. So what I invite the listeners to do, whether they're listening tonight or they're listening a month from now, be willing to explore yourself deeper.
Yeah.
Because the gifts, truly the gifts that are waiting within your own experience are so profound and so genuinely, authentically you.
Mm-hmm.
They become priceless gems that will give you the financials that you need, will give you the esteem, but more importantly, will give you back to yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And I promise you, the more you explore, the more you tap into your unique self-expression, the more you're going to be happy, the more you'll be able to simplify your life.
Yes.
And not look back.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to read the 7 principles to inner balance. Now, if you want, I can read them all 7. I can read one at a time. You tell me whatever comes up for you.
I think let's read them one at a time and then go into a dialogue.
Excellent. I love you, girl. That's perfect. Okay. The first principle to inner balance, bliss is our natural state of being. Now, what I like about this statement, natural.
Yeah.
Natural. We don't need tools.
Mm-mm.
We don't need makeup.
No.
We don't even need a cell phone.
No.
Well, meaning you can do this without a computer. Mm-hmm. You can do this without any technology.
Yeah.
Bliss without technology. Bliss is not incumbent on technology.
Well, when we are babies, we're very
vulnerable. Yes.
And there is that sense of aliveness in us.
Yes.
There is that inner sense of radiance, playfulness. It's the effortless effort. And there is a place of restfulness in this way of being.
Very much.
And these are all attributes of our natural self.
That's so wonderful.
And what happens is, the false beliefs, labels, and notions, they are the ones that cover our natural essence, the natural state of being, which is bliss. They cover it up and it's all good, though.
It is all good.
It's a game of hide and seek.
It is a game of hide and seek.
We've hidden ourselves, and now we're going to look for ourselves.
Exactly, because that's one of the wisdoms of why we came into the physical, quote-unquote, dense experience.
Yeah.
We have not come to Earth as a punishment. We have not come to Earth because we made a wrong turn in the cosmos. We came, a good friend of mine says, we came to have a vacation in limitation. And when we're non-physical and we can create anything we want with a thought, and it's so effortless, the idea that we would have limitation actually from that perspective has a glean and an anticipation that I want to try that.
Yeah.
Because people are like, no way. And it's like, yeah, if you had everything given to you, I mean, look at Buddha. He found his enlightenment not behind the walls as the prince, but under the tree in stillness.
Under the Bodhi tree.
Yeah.
It was out in the nature.
Exactly.
Just like Jesus Christ went out in the nature.
In the desert.
In the desert. And, you know, Rama went into exile for 14 years into the forest.
Oh, really? Okay, see, I think there is a pattern forming here.
There is, and so did Arjuna. He went away into hiding. He was kicked out of his own kingdom, and he had to stay in the forest for 12 years himself. And then 1 year after, they had to remain in hiding, because if they were discovered, they would be sent back for another 12 years.
Interesting.
So it's yes.
Well, I can remember, I don't remember the day, but meaning what actual day it was of the year, but I can remember the day when it came to me as an awareness, the less someone is born with, in other words, the more of a minority a person is born in America with, actually the further along they would potentially be on the path to enlightenment. And I realized this, of course, living in, at the time, going, I'm in Fairfield County, I'm supposed to have this, I'm supposed to do that, I should be here, but I'm only there. It hit me that the minorities had less pressure to be, you know, something that, you know, I was being pressured to be. Because for me, I don't function well under pressure. And it's funny, I used to, when I was sin, sin used to say, bring on the pressure, you know, it is the pressure that, you know, makes me a better person. I want to say that I welcome pressure now, but pressure for me is it's not the pressure to fulfill someone else's expectation of what is meant for me. It is my desire and my journey to become me. And that for me is not pressure. That to me is the goal of bliss.
Yeah. We get tied up with other people's expectations and pressure from that, or pressure from that comes from within, saying, oh, I want to be that because that's where it's going to get me.
Exactly.
Or that's how I'm going to be viewed.
Exactly.
And that pressure creates anxiety.
Exactly, because when you're on this journey just for, like, I remember setting an intention that I turned 30, and I basically said out loud, I want to know how the universe works. I'm not quite sure where that came from at the time, because I was neurotic, I was a drug addict, I was truly not in love with myself. I was in a relationship that was fulfilling only physical desires, but not necessarily emotional or spiritual desires. I mean, I was just a mess. And it was like, I really don't, you know, I just woke up one day and said, you know, I'm a smart woman making really stupid choices. Mm-hmm. Why? Why am I guided? Why is it that I am drawn to that which I know in my heart doesn't serve me, yet what serves me is the authenticity to go where I'm drawn. I just never could make that out. And today, 14 years later, I can make that out.
Right.
And that is a power from within no one can take from me.
Oh, absolutely not. It's
exquisite. It's mine.
It's there.
It's exquisite. I now know that when I'm in a relationship and there's pain involved and my friends are going, you know, he's just no good, you need to leave. And I'm going, no, I need to know why. I want to explore this pain because this pain has tremendous wisdom for me. And I know enough that the pain I feel if I'm not getting what I want will not kill me. It will teach me. I'm not afraid to be taught by the greatest teacher in my life, pain and fear.
Oh, life is a beautiful teacher.
Exquisite.
It is the master.
It is the master. I am not worthy. I am not. Well, because pain becomes so direct, so exquisitely mine. Oh, and I'm telling you, I've had relationships that, and when they're complete, they're complete. I know it. I don't leave in anger. I don't leave in, it's like any addiction. I was addicted to cocaine for many years. And I always said that I won't leave the addiction of cocaine. I will love the addiction until it no longer has a hold on me. I recommend that with anyone who has an addiction. If you try to leave it saying it's more powerful than you are, there will be a dance that you will do. It's what they call, like in the AA groups, a dry drunk.
Hmm.
So if I go to sleep at night dreaming that I'm doing cocaine, what is the difference whether I'm doing it or not?
If you're doing it in the mind, you're doing it in reality.
Because the body doesn't know reality from fantasy, from dream. It will still react in my system as if I'm doing it. And I always say that, you know, this life is meant to be transcended and transformed, not just denied. I don't deny myself anything, including if I want to do cocaine to this day. If I want to do it, I do. Because it doesn't have power over me. And if something does have power over me, I don't run away from it. I look it straight in its eye and go, okay, we need to talk. Or we need to dance or whatever it is. But it's an amazing thing to have an inner courage. Because when you have the inner courage, you are controlled by nothing but the desire to find more of yourself. It just makes the journey so exquisite.
It sure does. And just this morning I was writing in my journal. Something had come up. My son is actually in Edmonton visiting his father. This is my second marriage.
Okay.
And I went through a divorce.
Okay.
After being in a relationship for 10 years. And I had called for him, and my ex answered, and I haven't talked to him, and I thought I'd forgiven him and everything is done. But the last time I spoke to him was a few years ago when I was explaining to him that our son was going through an addiction problem.
Okay.
And he refused to help and do anything. And I felt really sad about it.
Right.
And I thought I'd forgiven him, and I went my way, my current husband, Deepak, who's wonderful.
He's fabulous.
Thank you.
Big hug to Deepak tonight.
Him and I, we helped our son out, and he's doing fine now. He's a brilliant young man.
Oh, awesome.
And part of the reason why children go out seeking for drugs is because their self is never, ever encouraged to come out in the school system.
Absolutely. It's a suppression. Yes.
Yeah, it is not encouraged to come out in our society, in the families we live in.
Absolutely.
So when they cannot express that unique expression, they get depressed.
Yes.
So it was a beautiful journey for our family where we had so much love for people with addiction.
Yes, the compassion, the compassion, exactly.
The compassion, and you know what? It's been a gift.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was brought to us by our son.
That's exquisite, Nirja. This is why we are also, there's such a strong connection for both of us. That I truly believe that those that walk this path find each other. I mean, we found each other literally on a path. I mean, but you can feel, you can see, you can sense those that judgment no longer feeds the energetic system.
No, it doesn't.
Because it just enforces separation when. Naturally, see, going back to the seven inner principles to balance, natural. We are going, what's happening to us on our planet is very natural.
It is.
And so if we run to our synthetic drugs, if we run to our exterior toys of whatever they may be, from television to iPods to whatever, the change will still take place because it's natural. This is not because you're reading spiritual books you're changing anymore. That might have been the case 10 years ago. That is definitely not the case since 2005 from my experience and what I know. It's just happening. We're in the midst of an evolution as well as an involution.
Mm-hmm.
And accepting that and learning from it and that evolution, involution is we're going from being human beings to human angels.
And Goldie, I must say this to you, that I don't even have words to express what I'm feeling in this moment towards you.
Oh.
You are leading by example. You're leading by example by being transparent, vulnerable, and so true to yourself on a radio show. It's just amazing. And we need more leaders like you who can stand up and do that. We spend so much energy hiding ourselves and our problems from each other, trying to look good on the outside.
Right.
Because we are afraid of that judgment. And you are so courageous, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I knew I'm so glad you're here. Nirja, I hold myself with you in me right now. Thank you. I don't know how else to be. I'm grateful that the time has come for me, that it's welcomed. it's been an interesting road until this point, but it is a pleasure. Thank you for acknowledging me. Wow, you're hot. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, wait, we're going to go into number two now.
Yes.
Okay. When our intellect, emotions, spirits, and instinct are aligned with the self, we see through compassionate eyes, feel through a loving heart, and act through our inner wisdom and power.
Oh, isn't that what's transpiring here, my friend?
Exactly what's transpiring.
Do we need to say more?
I mean, indeed, it's exact because, and I'll tell you, the one thing I'd like to say is the machine wants women to bicker and be petty with each other. When women support women, there will be a transformation on this planet that no singular energy can stop.
Oh, wow.
And I really, really honor that and support my sisters. I support my brothers as well, but I support my sisters because part of the machine is that we don't support each other.
Yeah.
So, mwah.
Another thing I would like to add here.
Please.
Even for people who are trapped in something they don't love to do.
Okay.
They do have freeing moments when their intellect, emotions, spirits, and instincts are aligned.
Yes.
And I would request for those people to hold on to that moment and to really feel it. And know that they are free to let go of where it doesn't serve their inner self, their inner soul.
Indeed.
To take that first courageous step and walk away, because when one door closes, 100 doors open. You just have to give yourself the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I have to take a breath. Okay, number three, our life is either an expression of the ego self or the capital S self.
Yes, and that is the ego self is the machine self, you call it, or the mechanical mind or the conditioned self.
Right.
And the self is in the moment, what Eckhart Tolle calls the power of now.
Oh, let's talk about that. We haven't even tapped into that yet. Indeed, wonderful. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, again, the simplicity of the now moment.
Mm-hmm.
So much of our, you know, you have this exquisite chapter on worrying.
Mm.
And I was, you know, it's a very fine line, so to speak, being a worrier and a warrior. And what's interesting is all of us have warrior in us. It is one of the archetypes. So whether you're male or female, it doesn't matter. A warrior we are.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're a worrier, the warrior attacks the self.
Yeah.
And it's like, I see people in their worry, and it's easier for me to see it. I didn't always see it in myself. I felt it in myself, but I didn't always see it. Since I'm working on transcending it, I see it in others how the worrying, it just builds the story up, and it's like, you know, 99.9 of that experience that you just talked about, it hasn't even taken place yet.
Yeah. The story is what the ego self can do. It lives in the story. It lives in the memories.
Yes.
And it actually, it gets its energy from the memory.
It does get the energy from the memory.
The minute you let go of the memory and arrive in the moment, it has no power over you. It's like, you know, when you when the sun comes out, the darkness is gone.
Right. And you even word that about it's just clouds.
It is.
Right.
That's what it is.
That is what it is.
And the practice of coming back into the moment by using your breath and noticing your sensations is the most powerful practice we can gift ourselves with. Even if we start by 5 minutes a day and expand it to 10 minutes, or before we're going into a meeting, you can take 5 minutes to just breathe and just be in the present moment. The more we begin to practice, or before we're starting to talk to our kids,
yes.
Just like before I went into my conversation with you,
yes.
5 minutes I took just to breathe, just to bring myself into the presence, into the present moment, and bring myself with a capital S.
Absolutely.
In the here and now.
Absolutely. And I want to quote from Bliss in Knowing the Self. Worry is a sign of losing control but being unable to admit it to oneself. Fear rises as we lose control of a situation, and thoughts of worry pour into the mind as though floodgates have opened. Now, you go on in this paragraph to talk about when your son didn't come home. But, I mean, that hit me so poignantly. I mean, I actually wrote it. I was like, I want to say that on the air. That worry is the sign of losing control, unable to admit it. Because people tell me all the time, well, you know, why am I worrying? And it's like, because you're not trusting.
Yeah.
Trust that the universe is a compassionate place.
And, you know, it's interesting you say that. Whether I lose or win, whether my son comes home or not,
okay,
it's all good.
Exactly.
And I learned it from him, because when he was going through this trouble, when he was going through this whole chaos, anytime I would say, Samir, you got to listen to me, and you've got to stop doing this, and he would look at me and he would say, Mom, it's all good.
Oh, I love it.
I wanted to smack him at the time. But today, it's like my mantra. It's true.
Indeed.
Whether I'm going through the pain or I'm going through happiness, it both pain and happiness are good for me.
Exactly. That is such a powerful declaration. When you can say that because you're living that, you're out of the machine, you are no longer mechanical, and the journey of your soul and you has clearly been undertaken, is underway. You're living it.
It is, and I think today, where we are, we really need to start to give out certificates for failures.
Yes!
Awarding failures, because you learn a lot more from failures and mistakes than you do from just successes.
Well, in all honesty, do you know any successes that have taken place without failures on the way?
Absolutely not.
Exactly. So if we're afraid to fail, we'll never succeed.
You're right.
It is literally, I tell my friends this all the time, I tell the children I work with too, it is part of the equation. If 1 + 1 = 2, failure plus action equals success. You must keep moving. You know, we know the famous saying that the only constant in the universe is change.
Yeah.
So a failure is simply an experience that needs to be tweaked. Just
so
tweak it.
Why do you think they don't have certificates for failures?
Well, because that would empower us. And then we'd have inventors running around and artists running around and musicians and, you know, and the machine would start losing, you know, the people running on the wheels.
The mechanical mind would lose itself.
Exactly. Which, and to be honest, consciousness is supporting everything we say.
Mm.
So it's happening anyways. Mm. We are coming out of a state of being that fear, isolation, ignorance, and doubt rule, to where in just a breath and a letting go. I remember when I figured out, or it hit me in my aha moment, that everything I was seeking, there was nothing to obtain. There was only the letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking to myself from a bodybuilder's point of view, because I had a personal trainer when I was 33,
mm-hmm.
and how it was like, oh, you know, you're struggling with these weights. And it was like, and enlightenment means I hold my hand out, I drop the weight, and I'm there. I was like, wow, you know, could it be any easier?
Hmm.
There's nothing to obtain. There's just everything to let go of.
Oh, because you know what? You are everything.
Exactly.
What can you obtain?
There's nothing to
obtain.
Hello? I know. It is so exquisite. Again, the simplicity that the child comes into this place enlightened. And if we knew the language of no speech, telepathy,
mm-hmm.
we would recognize that.
Words do tie our minds up.
Oh, yes. God bless symbolism. Oh, yes. Symbolism in our language, symbolism in our religion, symbolism in our currency. Symbolism. Okay, wait, we're going to go to the next one. Conditioned false beliefs keep the self hidden.
Yes, they are the unwritten rules we follow. So it's like a script. It's an unwritten script that I have, and that is what gets us into trouble.
Okay.
It's like when something is not going right, or you're having a conversation with a friend and your defense mechanism's coming up.
Okay.
That resistance that you feel, you're feeling not because the person is saying something, but because in your mind they're not following the script. They're not following you, that unwritten rule that you impose on people around you.
Interesting.
So when we want people to follow our codes of conduct,
okay,
we trap ourselves in our own expectations.
Can you give an example, like a parenting example?
So what? Like a parenting example could be, I'll give you an example from my own life here.
Oh, perfect.
So Natasha's not doing the dishes. Natasha's going to kill me for saying that on radio. She's not doing the dishes.
Okay.
Now, she may be busy. She has thousands of things going on. She's going to college. She has a boyfriend. She has a job. But in my mind, well, I used to help my mother do the dishes.
Okay.
Why isn't she helping me do the dishes?
Okay.
So it's not that by Natasha not doing the dishes, am I giving my power over to her by creating that rule?
Right.
And that rule bothers me, and it keeps that is my conditioned false belief that she should be doing the dishes.
Right.
When I let go of that belief, believe it or not, she will do the dishes.
I totally believe. Because there's, you know, resistance and flow.
Mm-hmm.
What's so interesting is people believe that they are the opposites of each other.
Mm-hmm.
In actuality, they're the same energy, just different points of awareness.
Absolutely.
So if we set up a situation in resistance, we're going to find the lack of that situation. And the reason why I say that, resistance simply means that, like you said, to give your power away, the soul, that's not a soul-filled inner balance activity.
Absolutely not.
And so, because I think it's extraordinary that your wisdom in your book, you speak about, you know, your children really helping you to understand that poem we read from Khalil Gibran. Okay, I don't have his name up anymore.
Okay.
Which is, you know, because part of the old consciousness is that, I mean, it used to be literally on the law books that children were our properties.
Mm-hmm.
Property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have come beyond children being our property, but have we really come beyond children that, you know, like, I see parents all the time, you know, saying, get this for me, get that for me, do this for me, do that for me. And it's like, it just seems so unconscious of their soul's experience.
It is. And I gave a very light example for an everyday, but parents impose their dreams on their kids.
Yes.
And if they don't live up to their dreams, lo and behold, there's conflict.
Definitely.
And that conflict is arising because the parent is not willing to let go of their rule, you know, their unwritten rule, that they are not able to put it out there.
Absolutely. Put it this way. As a Jewish person cleaning houses, that wasn't very accepted in my family.
I'm sure.
Right.
But they don't see the joy that you get out of it.
Well, I mean, because to me, the simplicity, I didn't work with anybody over my head. I wasn't committed into anything. I'm a dreamer. So cleaning a house, oh, my God, I could clean a house. If it was me and another girl, we'd do four houses in a day. So in 4 hours, I'd make mine. And the rest of the day, I got to go to the beach, or I got to relax, or I got to nap. I got to do whatever I wanted to do. And I made enough money to make mine.
Yeah.
And ironically, being Jewish in the house cleaning business, they would literally give me the keys, tell me the code to their alarm, and tell me when they weren't going to be home on the first day I met them, which was very much, you know, oh, you're a nice Jewish girl. They just felt so good about that. So it was like, I mean, but my parents were pretty much okay. My grandparents were so adamantly against me. No granddaughter of mine should be cleaning the toilets of somebody else's home. And I was like, I mean, it didn't bother me at all. I mean, and I was like, Grandma, you know, I know she also had issues when I dated a black man. And so I honor that's where they came from. But I can't reconstruct my life because they got upset over it. Mm-hmm. Because I think I've always had some sort of awareness in myself, just keep doing what feels good to you because ultimately it's your life.
You're following your bliss.
Indeed. Indeed. And back in when I was first, you know, coming into my experiences, like my 20s were really, I followed my bliss, but I was, you know, clearly numbing myself through the drugs, and I didn't have the awareness I have now that it's not just about what I do for a living that's important to follow my own authentic path, but also to speak my truth. And also, I mean, I did indeed live with my boyfriend who was black, where, again, that started, but because we were both on the drugs, we were just, you know, we were knuckleheads living together, and it was what it was. And I'm very fond of him. I've never left any experience in my life with a regret for doing it.
Well, because that was an essential piece of the tapestry called your life.
Yes, 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 yes. And if I can emphasize to people, that which you think is most wrong with you will turn into the greatest energy packets of love and life and wisdom and compassion when you move completely through.
Absolutely.
It's the truth. You will teach what the path you just walked on, and the world will come to you looking for that wisdom.
Yes, and you know something, I truly believe when the teacher is ready, the students show up.
That's exactly.
Not the other way around.
I caught that subtlety. Exactly.
Not the other way around. And the teacher, what they teach, they have to learn it in the hardest way.
It's a life experience. We could not know compassion until we went to the depth of darkness.
Right.
And whatever level of darkness that you have to go to, you have to go to. I mean, but I believe that there is wisdom, even for the soul or for the human. If tragically they don't make it out of the depth of darkness, they will come back. And there is lessons and wisdom once we're out of the physical being that helps us understand this aspect we call darkness, because darkness is so much a part of who we are.
Absolutely.
It's in our trying to make it not a part of who we are that we do the disservice to ourselves.
Well, because we have been pushing it away, that's where we make things worse.
Exactly.
That's where actually we're feeling the consequences of pushing the darkness away.
Because the darkness pushes back.
Right, it does, in a bigger way.
In a bigger way than, I mean, it's that whole, it's physics.
It is.
Cause and effect. If that's why I tell people, don't leave an addiction by saying, I'm just going to, no, I honor just stopping, but go deeper into why were you doing the addiction in the first place? Because the addiction is a symptom.
Yeah.
The core is something, whether it's, there's a piece of you that is missing, and you sense that missingness, and if you can bring in that piece that's missing yourself, that addiction won't haunt you ever again.
And I think if the addiction will not even be there.
It won't.
If we were to just know the self.
Absolutely.
That self-expression is what we're all longing for.
That's true.
That is our desire. That is our thirst. That is our quest. And when we don't get it, because we don't feel satisfaction in anything else.
We don't. It's the truth.
And when we don't feel that satisfaction, when we don't get that satisfaction, we go for addiction.
Yes, we continue seeking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I can honestly say that I'm reaching a point in my life where I'm no longer seeking. I'm choosing to express myself in areas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm taking on new projects, not to prove myself, but to experience myself as a creator.
God in you wants to experience being
exactly
whatever you're doing in the moment.
Exactly. Because the project that I've taken on has some promotion involved. And I spoke to the woman. I said, okay, we have a number that we have to hit in order to make it worthwhile for the person we're promoting. I went, and here's the truth. If we don't get the people signed up, then whatever money we originally got, we'll send back and say, okay, maybe next year.
Mm-hmm.
I have no fear that that will happen. And if it does happen, I have no fear to send the people's money back. Okay, we tried.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it was amazing because there were people on the committee that I could clearly see we're not resonating in that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I experienced for a first time. Instead of me, quote unquote, taking control,
mm-hmm.
I just kept expressing myself in this non-fear place of, if I fail, that's okay.
Oh, how beautiful.
Well, and she
opened up.
Well, no, she couldn't. She left by her own cognizance.
Oh, really?
In other words, I didn't ask her. I kept saying, you can come on board, but, you know, it's like, because where she would want to take control, I kept going, no, I'm just going to keep doing this. You're welcome to come with me, come with me, come with me. And she clearly didn't want to come with me. And so, but there was a time when I would have been like, listen, you think wrong, you're God.
Well, people are not used to this either. They're not used to that loving expression.
Yes.
Where people are not coming from fear.
It's so true.
So either they'll open up to you or they'll run away.
One or the other will happen. Both are beautiful.
Yeah.
For the nature of the project. Because I said, I was like, all you have to do is show up.
Mm-hmm.
That you're welcome to this project on any level you want to be at. I'm just not going to go into the fear because it's not because I'm choosing it. Meaning, I don't even see the fear at this point. I'm so excited to just express creatively. I'm like, hey, I'm enjoying it already. There's no, and here's one of the beautiful things. The hotel, which most of the hotels said, if you block a book of rooms, you know, you're responsible for 70% of those rooms. The hotel we found said you can release 100% the block of the hotels.
Isn't that amazing?
And I looked at the woman yesterday when I talked to her, and I go, you know, because of that, because you've taken the pressure out, we'll probably fill double.
Mm.
And she looked at me, and she goes, you know, we need that here. And I was like, it's all good. We'll bring it here. I mean, she was so openly showing me that, you know, the hotel business is taking a hit, and her working in the frequency that we're working at together, her and her hotel will do well. Me and my group will do well. And nobody will not lose. I mean, I just know that. I know that because the self, the capital self, is creating all of this.
Right, right.
It's so exquisite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're exquisite, your child.
This
is amazing. This is, and we have, I mean, oh my, many, many shows we have with each other, so many shows. Okay, number 5, self-awareness is the gateway to the self.
Hmm. Yes, because without the self-awareness, how are you going to discover this beautiful, exquisite self?
Right.
And self-awareness, without the practice, like, you cannot go into the gym expecting that you're going to come out with a great body overnight.
Right.
Unless you walked in with one.
Right, right.
Well, same thing with discovering the self. It's like you're carving out on a rock to bring this beautiful configuration out that is yourself. But you have to carve. You have to use the chisel. You have to keep going at it. And self-awareness is a practice. It is a daily practice. And I would be lying if I say if you follow these seven principles, you will get nirvana, enlightenment. No, it's not about following it for today. It's not about following it for 2 weeks, 1 year program. It is a lifelong program.
Absolutely.
It is self-awareness in every moment. Because pain and suffering comes from lack of self-awareness.
Exactly. It's the indicator you're not being self-aware.
Yeah. And to rise above pain, we must befriend awareness.
Right.
And awareness is not something that'll come through tools and techniques. It'll come by returning in this moment, every moment, for the rest of your life.
Indeed. Indeed. And, you know, it's so interesting because when I first, quote, unquote, started the journey of ascension, I really believed the journey of ascension meant I would become, you know, an angel with wings. Everybody would love me. There'd be no more pain in my life. The reason why I stutter is because I have gone deeper into darkness, my own darkness. I mean, I know I went pretty deep with the cocaine, but I was so unaware. I just felt isolated. My ascension path has taken me with eyes wide open. And like you said, a vulnerability. The first time I ever went on radio with a dear friend of mine, Greg Norman, I cried when I was on the air because he said to me, if you're going to work on radio, you have to be prepared to answer the truth, any truth. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, you know, is he going to bring up my drug past? You know, I'm a nanny. If the nanny finds out about my drug past, you know, are you kidding me? I could lose my job. And blah, 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 blah. I mean, my mind went on high gear, full throttle. I was going downhill. And Greg was like, you know, so tell us a little something about yourself. And I broke down in tears. I couldn't breathe. A friend of mine called the studio and goes, breathe, Goldie, breathe. It was a mess. I mean, you would look at that and go, she'll never do radio again. And it was clear to me, I mean, I composed myself, and when I spoke, instead of speaking at the moment, because I wasn't there ready to give them my now moment, but I went to my history. I went to when I worked at the bank, and because he asked me something, I don't even remember specifically. I just remember that, you know, it's a process, exactly like you said, of owning more and more of who I am and knowing that the families that I nanny for now, I'm just as transparent to them as I am on the air. And they have opened up to me things that they've done in their childhood that have brought them awareness. And you know, none of us are perfect.
No.
So trying to be perfect for everyone else is just a lot of effort that really creates a lot of pain.
I call it the erroneous perfection.
Yes.
You know, the lie that we live, that we are so perfect, our families are so perfect.
Yes.
Without the flaw, that perfection is impossible.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yes. And I appreciate your stories. You truly are a warrior, not a worrier.
No.
You truly are.
Well, I am because I set myself up for these big things.
I want to say something because I held on to it. It's not that you have gone into your darkness more. It's your relationship with darkness has changed because of self-awareness.
Oh, that was brilliantly stated.
So we can see it for what it is, and we're not afraid of it.
Exactly.
That is self-awareness.
And when you know that it can't hurt you, it becomes your greatest ally.
Yes.
I mean, because I can't tell you the families that I work for that have said to me, I'm so grateful you're in my children's lives. Mm. I mean, they touch me. that they go, we feel our children are not only safe with you, Goldie, they explore a depth of life that we can't offer them, but you can.
And you know why you can offer that? Because only a lit candle can light other candles.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And when we are not self-aware, we're not lit, we are hiding behind the darkness, not fully being authentic and true to ourselves.
Wow, that's once again brilliant. Well, you're showing me so much about me tonight. I'm really enjoying this.
It's all about me.
And I tell people all the time, it's all about me. Oh, that is just so beautiful. And I, you know, inspire and aspire. I want to inspire and aspire people that to, if they're willing to just look through their pain and from the inside, from the state and in the presence of owning it, being responsible for what hurts in your life, just so you can then come from a point. Once you own it, you can transcend it.
Absolutely. Without owning it, without accepting it, transcendence is impossible.
Impossible. And the machine counts on you not owning it.
Yeah.
And divinity counts on you owning it.
You know something, I must say this.
Okay.
The machine is part and parcel of the divinity.
It truly is. You're absolutely right. Remember in The Matrix, did you ever see the movie The Matrix?
Yes, of course.
At the end, he had to become the machine. Remember when Mr. Smith became Neo?
Mm-hmm.
In that whole battle in the rain and the dark, and it was becoming the machine that and he went to Machine Land as well,
mm-hmm.
and saw all the light.
Yeah.
But indeed, no, please go on, God, you're I just loving this because it, you know, it really is all divine. It's all good.
It's all good, like Samir says.
Yes, it is all good. Every angle, inside, outside, all around. And because it's natural, it's all good to all of us. It has nothing to do with any casting system.
No.
We are divine because we are. There's no requirements. There's nothing you need to buy or obtain. You just are.
Pure bliss.
Pure bliss. Bliss in knowing the true self. I love it.
Bliss is in knowing the self.
Okay, there it is. I love you, Neerja.
It's so blissful that we forget the real name.
I do. I didn't have it on my corner, so I was trying to do it. Ah, this is exquisite. Okay, but wait, there's a great, number six is a great one. No, six and seven are very interesting. Number six, reactions stem from defense mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting topic because I don't think people before, shamans call what we call awareness, shamans call it stalking the self. And
true.
It's the method to watching ourselves.
Yeah, you're observing. You're constantly observing everything that comes up. The bad and the ugly.
Exactly, because it all points to self.
Yes, and the reactions, they're a cover-up.
Yes.
They're a cover-up of that inner pain, inner conflict. And if we don't uncover it, it'll keep us imprisoned in the past.
See, now, and you speak about the prison. Let's talk about the, actually, that could be number seven, huh? I think that's number seven. Okay, let's talk about that in a moment. I mean, we can bring that up because people think that the people who, quote unquote, are in jail or, you know, incarcerated are the ones in prisons because they clearly are in bars and cells.
Mm-hmm.
People without stalking themselves have no idea. This is another sort of prison.
It is.
Working a life with no creativity,
mm-hmm.
working, coming home, eating, watching TV, going to bed, waking up in the morning and doing it again.
The robotic, mechanical way of being.
Exactly. We're nothing, you know, in fact, if you get creative, often, you know, the job will you know, kind of, you know, tap you on the hand and go, no, just stick to the quota.
Yes.
I mean, even, it's like, that is a prison that it seems like it's sublime because you're like, no, I'm not in prison. I can come and go as I please. But can you?
No.
Right.
Absolutely not. And what keeps us imprisoned in this defense mechanism, the reactions, if I may just quote it.
Oh, please.
When inner wisdom, remember the four pillars, wisdom, power, love, and compassion?
Yes.
So when the inner wisdom is depleted, we become arrogant or manipulative, seeking control by bullying or manipulating. The deeper issue is a cover-up for ignorance. So people who are arrogant, they're covering up their ignorance. So
wow.
When inner power... Sorry, did you want to say
no, that? No, I'm wowing you. You're wowing me. Keep going, please.
So now we're going to take a look at power, the inner power.
Okay.
When inner power is depleted, we become aggressive or submissive, seeking control by conquering or pleasing. The deeper issue is a cover-up for inner doubt and powerlessness.
Wow.
Now we look at love. When inner love is depleted, we crave attention or protection, seeking control by wanting love from others or protecting ourselves from being hurt. The deeper issue is a cover-up for deep-seated fear of not being good enough.
That's prevalent too.
And the last one is when the inner compassion is depleted,
mm-hmm.
we accuse or resent, seeking control by blaming others for our misfortunes. The deeper issue is a cover up for isolation. So our need to seek control in the outer world is to fill the lack of control within.
Oh. Goldie applause.
You're too cute.
Well, because it's so brilliant that, because I just want people to know, seven, which we're already talking about, and we're not going to go into it, meaning separately, I want to combine the two, six and seven. Seven is a conditioned way of being, imprisons us. That's what this is about, that if we believe the conditioning, when we're good at what we've been conditioned to believe, we're going to have fear, isolation, ignorance, and doubt in our life, even though we're successful.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about, you know, I know that because it's the game of hide and seek.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you feel complete in your life and you're ready to come out, you can start understanding that, ironically, failure is success. That which you fear is an aspect of love. The isolation through blame can easily be shifted into the compassion for what someone else is going through, because I think people really genuinely, I mean, look at what happened on 9/11 and the when the tsunami hit. Such compassion poured into the world.
And because that's a natural way of being.
It is very natural, exactly. Not the, you know, because it's so funny, I know people that are scientists or sciencely bent that goes, you know, no, violence is natural. You know, look at the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
And I go, violence in the animal kingdom is usually only around the feeding
mm-hmm.
of the animal kingdom.
That's the food chain.
But if the bellies are full, you can see two animals that might be predators feeding at the same water hole because there's a drought going on and that's the only water hole. It's like only mankind, you know, we're competitive, we're insecure, we're so many things.
Well,
that,
yeah, that's why we suffer so much, you know.
Yeah.
Because we don't recognize that having compassion takes no effort because it's the natural state of being.
That's excellently put. Exactly. And where people will say, oh, it's so hard to be compassionate. And I'm like, only because you're caught up in a belief, in a perception that compassion, I think people associate compassion with weakness.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not weakness, it's effortless.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between effortless means you don't have to, you can't believe how much energy is being put into this dimension to keep all these stories going. It's like the other dimensions, the non-physical dimension looks at us and goes, that is unbelievable how much energy is creating this world. Because it's so based not on an effortless experience.
So true.
Mm.
So true. Sorry.
Please.
You know, if the listeners are interested, I do put out articles that are based on the self-awareness, self-knowledge.
Okay.
And it also moves into the resilience model that we've created and the assessment that we've created. You can download a lot of information on rhythmofsuccess.com. And it's RHYTHMOF, as in Frank, SUCCESS.com, rhythmofsuccess.com. And you can get into any kind of information that you want and even sign up for newsletters. And the book information is also on knowingtheself.com.
And there is another book which we're going to speak of the next time you come on, which is The Art of Resilience.
And the website for that is also artofresilience.com.
Right. Now, the rhythm of success, that's where those, because I did see today the two download links. You have free download links. That's where they would find those?
That's right.
Okay. So rhythmofsuccess.com. It talks a lot about what we're talking about in the books, but I'll be honest with you. Nirja was generous enough to send me the books. They're exquisite. I mean, they're exquisite for someone who's genuinely looking to be on the path of self. You know, it's not something that someone's not going to give this path to you. You're going to claim it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people around you might get upset as you start, you know, becoming self. Like my grandparents got upset when I started cleaning other people's toilets. But you're going to recognize that, and they're going to recognize that as you live in the presence of yourself, they're going to see your joy. They're going to see you being, you're going to get sick less. You don't get sick when you're in flow.
No.
You cleanse, you purge, but you don't get sick.
And let's not scare the listeners. Just because you discover the self doesn't mean you're going to write a book or you're going to clean the toilets or you're going to have a show, such a profound show like Goldie.
No, right. It's going to be your the whole part is you're going to find you. You in every beautiful, glorious way that you are, and it can be something as magnificent as, you know, maybe you'll become president. Maybe you'll be the first woman to become president of the United States. And maybe you'll just sit under a tree and become enlightened.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. I definitely don't mean to scare. I mean to tell you finding who you are is the greatest gift you can give yourself in any lifetime.
And, you know, no matter what you discover and what you become and what you do, the number one reason for discovering the self is that the fear is going to begin to go away from you. It'll be afraid of you.
Yeah. Well, you'll be. Does it go away or do you befriend it?
You befriend it. You accept it. You become it.
You do become it. And there is just, it's an alchemical experience. When you bring presence to your fears, it is more than just a fear that transcends. Something underneath that or something because of that, I don't know how it works, I just have experienced it, you become more than what you were prior to. It's almost like what's separated now, the natural effect is it's unifying.
Oh, beautiful.
And when it unifies, you will become more than masculine and feminine because you're both.
Mm-hmm.
You will become more than light and dark. I mean, it's more that you'll become more than right or wrong, more than happy or sad. You will become God expressed.
Rumi has a beautiful poem. His two lines that I remember each time is that out and beyond the right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I will meet you there.
Oh, namaste. Yeah. Neerja, you're exquisite.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. This has been so much fun.
Did you get the energy?
Oh, I sure did. And Goldie, I must tell you, before when you said, hey, did you want me to prepare? Did you want me to have questions? And you said, no, not at all. And I've never done a radio talk show like this before. So I was a little nervous. I've done a lot of other things, you know, very, very spontaneously. But I do believe in it. And it was so effortless.
Oh.
It's like having a conversation, which it was.
Indeed. And, you know, in all honesty, I can honestly say tonight I didn't worry about the callers or the chat room. I mean, whoever was here to experience us was there. But in all honesty, I experienced you. You are worthy of my full attention.
Oh, you too. And I experienced you, and I honor the being in you. I just honor it and I cherish it. And I look forward to our next connection, Goldie.
Indeed. So I want to make a few announcements that I actually remembered I didn't make at the beginning of the show, which is Tricia Lindner, my exquisite chat room coordinator. She is a wonderful, I can't think, Trish, I'm totally a travel agent. Yes, Trish is a travel agent. She has a website, awttravelonline.com, and she can help you with travel. She can help you with going to concerts or shows. She's completely been helping us put together the New York pod for Almeen. She's been invaluable. All her connections and her ability to negotiate, much, much better than Goldie. Much, much better than Goldie. That's another thing about knowing the self. When you know there's a part of you that might not be a strong aspect, like my strong aspect is promotion. While putting this together, it's clear to me that negotiation is not my strong aspect. So I've been telling everybody, I'm physically the closest one to check out the New York spaces for these venues. But let's not even begin to try and have Goldie negotiate prices or stuff, because what happens is the business world kind of sees me as being green and they pounce. And they're asking for astronomically ridiculous things. And I was like, I joked with them and said, listen, we'll just call Goldie Juan. Tell them I don't speak English. I'm just going there to check out the space. So this way they don't put any expectations on Goldie. And I mean, I think there's nothing wrong to admit, you know, a space that I mean, if it was up to me and I wanted to, you know, learn more about negotiation, I can learn more about it. And it's also completely okay to understand that Dawn, my partner, is a professional negotiator. So, well, by golly, Dawn, you go negotiate. But Trish has been tremendously helpful. Please contact her with any travel experiences. She really can find you amazing prices. Even if you don't want to go through Trish, if you just go through her website, these really low prices will come up. So, Trish, thank you for all you do. And 90 seconds. Okay. Neerja, I love you. I hope that we get a chance to hike again.
Yes, absolutely. We loved it there.
Yeah. And there's I'm going this Sunday. You and Deepak are absolutely welcome. I know you got the email. If you have other things going on, no worries. When I learn these two new chambers, the best part is I'll be able to take people there on my own.
Okay.
So thank you so, so much. And Liara online is saying, thanks for the insight presented here. Love the energy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liara. It's a pleasure to share that which you want for everyone. And it's so obvious, me and Neerja, we really do want this for everyone.
Yes,
so thank you, and I will, I'm going to bid everybody adieu, and I will speak to everybody next week. And Neerja, I'll speak to you very soon in the near future.
Thank you so much again.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye now.